Hello and good evening from Yerushalayim Merkurgis. Welcome to the weekly shiur from Kol Yinadav. Tonight we're going to discuss Megillas Tainus. Now Megillas Tainus is mentioned in numerous places in the Gemara and appears in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, which we just finished, and also appears in Maseches Tainus, which we're learning now, so it's appropriate and fits for the Daf Yomi for this time. For this, where we are. A little about Megillas Tainus. The Gemara in Shabbos, David Gimel Amud Beis, says like this: Tan Rabbanan, Mikas of Megillas Tainus. Who wrote Megillas Tainus? Omer, they said, Hananya ben Chizkia v'Siyato. Hananya ben Chizkia and the people around him, Shri Mechabe ben Esatzaros. That they were mechavim to tzaros, literally it means that they liked the tzaros. But as Rashi says, shenigolim mehem, they appreciated the fact that they were spared from the tzaros. V'aneis chaviv aleihem azkiro, and they liked the neis to mention it. V'shibrocho shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to praise Hashem. V'kosim me'anes asosim yomtov, and they wrote down the days of the neis to make them a yomtov. So we have already a Gemara that says that Hananya ben Chizkia is the one who wrote Megillas Tainus because he's Mechabe ben Esatzaros, and as Rashi says, they appreciate the miracles that Hashem did when they were redeemed from the Tzaros. Although some say, you could say that the Tzaros themselves caused Klal Yisrael to do tshuva. And when they do tshuva, that's when they are saved. So in other words, they appreciated not only the fact that they were saved, but they appreciated the purpose that the tzaros came for in order to do tshuva and to be saved. Who is Hananya ben Chizkia? When was he? So the Mishnah in Shabbos is talking about Elim and Alachos Shama Balias Hananya ben Chizkia ben Goran Shaul Levakim Nimle Rabu Beishama Beisilo Yudches Dvarim Gozer Bavayom. In the Aliyah of Hananya ben Chizkia, in the attic of Hananya ben Chizkia, these are the halachas that were said. And in those days, Beis Shammai overpowered Beis Hillel in 18 things. In other words, normally the halachas like Beis Hillel, but in these 18 things, Beis Shammai were more powerful and they passed an halach like Beis Shammai. And these are besides six other machlokas in that we passed them like Beis Shammai. So if we're talking about Hananya ben Chizkia and days that we're talking about the days of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, the Talmidim of Shammai and Hillel. Shammai and Hillel, as the Gemara says in Shabbos, were around. Hillel was around. He was Nasi 100 years before the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. So we're talking about the period after that, because Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are the Talmidim of Shammai and Hillel. As the Gemara says in Shabbos, Shammai and Hillel themselves only disputed three things. They only had a machlokas on three issues. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are the Talmidim. As the Gemara says, they're the people, Shalosh Shimshu called Tzarkom, they didn't serve them properly, and that's when the Torah got forgotten, and that's when the machlokas of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel came about. So that's a little after Hillel, maybe even 25 years later, which means 75 years before the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. What's interesting is that the Gemara mentions a couple other things that he did, that in his days, Chachamim wanted to be gone in Sefer Yecheskel. They wanted to take Sefer Yecheskel and hide it, and why? Sheidvav Sosim Divrei Torah. Because it seemed that what it said in Sefer Yecheskel contradicted what the Torah says, and therefore they were going to be gone in Sefer Yecheskel. So that's an interesting topic in itself. We know we have a sefer from a navi. How could we be gone? Is it? But that's a separate issue. But we see that even as late as 75 years before the Churban Beis Hamikdash, there were still issues on which farm can be excluded from Tanakh. Okay, but back to our subject. We're talking about Megillas Tainus. So what is Megillas Tainus? Megillas Tainus is a list, as Rashi just said, is a list of those days that were Yomim Tovim Yisrael. What things went into the list? If we'll take a look at Megillas Tainus, we'll see that it includes days that there were bad gezeiros for Klal Yisrael and they were rescued from those gezeiros. It also includes theological issues, certain things that they debated with the tzedukim or the kusim, etc., that they debated with them, and so were able to prove that they are right. Those things are also included in Megillas Tainus. Hopefully at the end we'll discuss the issue about the Megillas Tainus and that, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Now, Megillas Tainus itself actually consists of two parts. There's the, the Mishnah and the Gemara part. In other words, it's in the concise Mishnah form. It has a statement, a short statement, with each day mentioned, and in very brief, what happened on that day. And then, after that, there's like a Gemara, or like an explanation at length, explaining what those days are. There's a link that should be up, which links you to a site that has a photocopy of Megillas Tainus. And on the left side of the page is an index over there based on the months. So when we switch a month, or we refer to a month, you can click on that month, and you'll get to the text from that month. I'm holding in my hand over here a copy of Megillas Tainus. It's been published in numerous publications in the last couple of years, even a scientific publication came out with the different texts that were found in different manuscripts, and we have Megillas Tainus and the explanation on the Megillas Tainus. When was it compiled? We said it covers Yomim Tovim, it covers miracles, it covers celebrations that happened to Klal Yisrael during the second Beis Hamikdash period. And as we'll see, when we're talking about during the Beis Hamikdash period, it covers a long time. The second Beis Hamikdash stood for 420 years, and if we say Hanani ben Chizkiah compiled it 75 years before the destruction, so we're talking about a period of 350 years, which will include the Hellenistic period, the Hashmonaic period, and the beginning of the Roman period as well. Okay, so let's start. We're going to start with Nisan. The Megillas Tainus starts with Nisan, and it starts off with an introduction. Ilein Yomaya Delo Sanah Bahon, or Miktzah San Delo Mispeit Bahon. These are the days that are listed in this Megillah. One may not fast. When we say it's a celebration, it's a Yom Tov, it doesn't mean that you're not allowed to do work, it means that you're not allowed to fast. Or Miktzah San, and some of them, Delo Mispeit Bahon, and some of them you're also not allowed to do a Hespeit, you're not allowed to do a eulogy. So in other words, there's two dinim. The Isser fasting applies to all the days listed in Megillas Tainus, and those that are specified also, one may not make a eulogy, may not make a hesped on those days. Now the status exactly of those days, etc., is discussed in the second paragraph of Maseches Tainus. So a couple more blot, and next week, Baruch Hashem, we'll get to that, and you'll know that the different status. What about the days before? What about the days after? That's discussed in the second paragraph of Megillas Tainus. Okay. Minrei Shachat Nisan. From Rosh Chodesh Nisan Vat Tamanya Bay until the eighth day, Itokam Tamida, the Lola Mispret. The Tamid, the carbon Tamid, was established, and you're not allowed to do a Hesped. In other words, these days are not only Yom Tov that you're not allowed to fast, but also you're not allowed to do a Hesped. And that's the text in brief. In other words, for 8 days, they were debating with the Tzedukim an issue of the carbon Tamid. And after those 8 days, they were able to prove to the Tzedukim that they were correct, and they made it a Yom Tov. What was the issue? Shayu Tzedukim Omrim. Now, we're not going to read everything in the whole text because that will take forever. We're going to try to touch on a few major things, including a surprise which has to do with today's date, Chafei Teves. And Shayu Tzedukim Omrim Mevim Tvidim Mishal Yacht. The Tzedukim would say that the Karban Talmud comes from an individual, meaning an individual can come and donate a Karban Talmud. What is the Karban Talmud? To refresh our memory, every day in the Beis HaMikdash, in the morning and in the afternoon, the first Karban in the morning was the Karban Talmud, and the last Karban in the evening before sunset was the Karban Talmud. And that came from, that was a Karban Tzibur, that was a Karban that represented all of Klal Yisrael. And it comes from the Karban Tzibur. But the Tzedukim were saying מביא את מי דמשל יחד. An individual can come and donate the Talmud. וזה מביא שבת אחד. וזה מביא שתי שבת אחד. וזה מביא שלושים יום. This guy can bring carbon Talmud for 1 week. And this guy can donate carbon Talmud for 2 weeks. And this guy can bring for a whole month. ומה הדור שמה מקוסף? בדור says, נתור שקבוס, איך תעשה בבוקר? תעשה individual. אמרו חכמים, you can't do that because it says, צבס בני ישראל, תשמע נקבלי במעד. This text is also found in the Gemara in Menachos. But the text continues. And when they defeated the Tzedukim, Hitkinu, they made a takana. Shushokim Shikleim, that they're bringing their shkolim, or Menichan Osam Belishka, and they'll put them in the Lishka, So when they defeated the Tzedukim, when they proved the Tzedukim wrong, when they proved that the Mashmas in the Torah is that it's got to come from the Tzibur, so they made a takana that the people should bring their shekels and put it in the Lishka, and that's Tzumas HaLishka. So the whole Masach HaShkolim, seemingly that was a new takana. Isaac Alevi in the Sefer Dor HaShoshanim proves that that's not the case. It definitely was a chiyuv of machzis shekel beforehand, but they reestablished the takana. So in other words, the issue over here is twofold. One is, can an individual bring carbon tzibur? Can an individual bring a carbon that the tzibur is obligated? And two, if yes, then there's no real need to collect machzis shekel, because the purpose of the machzis shekel is that everyone participates equally, giving everyone participates equally, giving a machzis shekel. The money is gathered, and from that money they buy the korbanos tzibur. But if an individual could donate a korban tzibur, then there's no real need for machzis shekel. Anytime we need a korban tzibur, an individual donated, and that's fine. So the issue is twofold: A, can the yachid bring the korban tzibur, and two, is there need for bringing machzis shekel? So according to the Tzedukim, there's no real need for bringing machzis shekel. So wait a second. So what do we do with the mitzvah in the Torah? When the Torah it says a mitzvah, bringing machzis shekel. So it's very interesting. But of course we have Parshas Shkolim, which is the Shabbos before Chodesh Adar, or Chodesh Adar, and Mashmir Mal Shkolim, and we announce to bring in every year, you bring Shkolim. But in the Torah, when we read the Parsha of Shkolim, it doesn't say that you have to bring this machzis shekel every year. It says people are counted, they have to bring the machzis shekel. It doesn't say that they have to bring it every year. The Tzedukim are known for not believing in Torah Shabbat Peh. They only believe in Torah Shabbat Chsav. So the Torah tells you to bring machzis shekel, but the Torah doesn't tell you to bring it on a yearly basis. The Torah could be saying, bring it once. And indeed, very interestingly, in the Dead Sea Scrolls, one of the scrolls is known as the Temple Scroll. And the Temple Scroll, which was the longest scroll found, it's clearly been identified today as a Tzeduki document, and in, for various reasons. And what very interesting is that in column 39 it says like this: Kol Kal Adas Yisrael, any Jew, Vager Sheivaled Besocho, and a ger was born into them. Dorevi, from fourth generation, with an Esim Shana Vamala, from 20 years old, when they come to bow down to me, a woman or a child should not come, ad yom asher yishlim chok aluma, a woman shouldn't come at all, and a child should not come until he grows up and reaches 20, the age of 20. V'nosan, pidyon nafshal Hashem machzis hashekel. And he gives pidyon nefesh to redeem himself half a shekel, lizi karon, b'moshu seyem, asrim gera shekel. So in other words, they bring, before they can come to the Beis HaMikdash, a woman can come at all, and a male can come when he reaches the age of 20, and he brings his machzis shekel. V'chasher yisu minenos machzis shekel, and when he pays the machzis shekel, yishavali. He has to swear to me, achar yavol. And after that they can come. So in other words, this document, the Temple Scroll document, which as I said, is clearly, the evidence clearly points to the fact that it is a Tzeduki document. says there is a machzis shekel, but the machzis shekel is a one-time thing. And when is this one-time thing? When you reach the age of 20. So where did they get this from? Well, when we read Parsha Shkolim, that's Kisisas Rosh Bnei Yisrael of Kudeim, Benos Nei Shkolim from Avsho, Zayitnu Kol Over of Kudim Machzis HaShekel. In other words, it's talking about the people who are counted, and we know from Parsha Bamid, but the people are counted only from the age of 20. So the Torah says that you give a Machzis HaShekel when you reach the age of 20, and you count it. It doesn't say directly that you have to give a Machzis HaShekel on a yearly basis. And again, the Tzedukim, who didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Pei, so they took it literally. You pay the Machzis HaShekel once, and you pay it before you go into the Beis HaMikdash, and that's it. So that's an interesting thing. And that was the first in the month of Nisan. For those 8 days, they were having debates back and forth, and when finally the issue was resolved, they made all those 8 days up. The second thing in Nisan, from the 8th of Nisan until the end of Yom Tov, the holiday of Shavuos was resolved. Now, we're not going to go into the whole issue why we need the 8th day, when the 8th day was already Yom Tov before. The Gemara discusses that, and why we need the whole Pesach to be included in the Yom Tov when it's a Yom Tov. Anyway, the Gemara discusses that. So it says that from the 8th of Nisan until the end of Pesach, itos of Chag de Shavuayah. The Chag of Shavuos was reestablished, the law of Mispad, it shouldn't be Maspid. Ve'ez azeh, zat teres. And which Yom Tov is this? It's a teres, which is Shavuos. What was the issue? Ela shayu donim keneged baitasim sheyomer matzeres lachar Shabbos. The baitasim. Now there were different groups in those days, and not to confuse between the groups, although sometimes we don't know much about each group itself. We have the Tzedukim and the baitasim and the Prushim and the Samaritans, the Kusim, all different groups. Baitasim and Tzedukim. The Rambam says there were Talmidim of Antignus Shoko who misinterpreted what he said, and they established their own sect. We don't exactly know the difference between the Baitusim and the Tzedukim. In books like Josephus, he does not refer to the Baitusim. So we don't know exactly how they are different from the Tzedukim. The Tzedukim appear and remain on the map for quite a while, and the Rambam says that the Karaim, the modern day Karaim, who were around already in the Rambam's days, who established in the 8th century, are continuation of the Tzedukim. But the Baitasim, we're not exactly sure who they are, and I'll just mention possibly in a moment. They are not the Samaritans, the Kusim. The Kusim were different, and had different rules, although there were some, as we'll see in a moment, there were some similarities between the Kusim and the Baitasim and the Tzedukim, but they are separate groups, totally separate groups. Some want to say there's a third group that Josephus mentions, and he gives them a lot of coverage, we can say, in modern language, and they're a group called the Essenes. And he talks about them, he has a lot of respect for them, people who lived, who materialistic matters meant nothing to them, and they lived a spiritual life, etc. They're not referred to in Chazal. In Hebrew they're called the Essenes. Someone suggests that Baitos is the word of Beit Sin. In other words, the Baitosim are the same Essenes that Josephus mentions. It's speculation, I can't say yes or no, I'm just throwing this possibility. We can't say for sure yes or no, but I'm just mentioning it. But again, we have the Baitasim and we have the Tzedukim, and according to Rambam, Baitas and Tzedek were two Talmidim of Antignus Yishtocho. Antignus Yishtocho said, do not serve Hashem for the purpose of getting reward, and they misinterpreted it to mean that there is no Olam Haba and there is no reward in the world to come, and that's when they started their own sect. So what was the issue? There was Shayudonim connected Baitasim Shayuam and Matzeres Lachar Shabbos. They were negotiating, they were discussions with the Baitasim that they used to say that Atzeres, that Shavuos will always come out after Shabbos. In other words, Shavuos always comes out on a Sunday. Why is this? Because, so now the Megillas Tainus goes on a whole length, etc., which we'll not read all of it, but the main point is the Pasuk says that the Korban Omer, which comes B'machras HaShabbos Yinifen HaMakoyim, the Korban Omer comes the day after Shabbos. The Perushim interpret that to mean B'machras HaShabbos from the day after Yom Tov. In other words, Yom Tov, the first day of Pesach, is the 15th of Nisan, and on the 16th of Nisan you bring Korban Omer. While the Baitasim said B'machras HaShabbos means Shabbos. So if the first day of Pesach came out on Shabbos, so you're right, so the next day, Sunday, you bring Korban Omer. But what happens if Pesach came out on a Thursday? According to the Baitasim, you would push off the Korban Omer. You wouldn't bring it on the 16th, which is Friday. You wouldn't bring it on the 17th, which is Shabbos. You'd only bring it on the 18th. You bring it on the 18th, the Korban Omer, you'd bring on the 18th, which is Sunday. Now this also, besides the fact that you're not bringing the Korban Omer on time, also has other implications. Because, other consequences. Because if you bring the Omer only on Sunday, so then you only start counting Sefiras HaOmer on Sunday also. And if you start counting Sefiras HaOmer on Sunday, 7 weeks later, the last day, the 49th day, is going to be on Shabbos. And Shavuos will be on Sunday. So in other words, the issue is over here to bring the Korban Omer on Sunday and to make Shavuos on a Sunday, and that's what he brings over here, that the Moshe Rabbeinu wanted Klal Yisrael to have, since Shavuos is a short holiday, he wanted them to have a long celebration, and that's why he set it up that it should be on a Sunday. This is interesting because to this very day we said that you have the Sadukim and you have the Samaritans, the Kusim, who are different groups, that's true, but certain similarities there are. And the Karaim, which as I mentioned moments ago, according to the Rambam, the Karaites, which are continuation of Tzedukim, to this very day, they have Shavuos on a Sunday. Likewise, the Samaritans, who are the Kusim, also the 600 of them, and we'll talk about them soon, also have Shavuos always on a Sunday. So this, that we see over here, this debate that they defeated the Tzedukim, they may be convinced that Tzedukim who lived in Yerushalayim in those days, but I guess some of them remained with their ideas that Shavuos is always going to have to come on a Sunday, and to this very day, that's what we see among these sects, that it comes out on a Sunday. And then the Gemara goes through a whole length to explain the different proofs that when it says Mimachas HaShabbos, we mean the day after Yom Tov, but not the day after Shabbos. Okay. We're on to Perek Sheni, ER. Click on the next thing, or click on ER, and in ER, B'Shiva B'Ir Chanukas Shur Yerushalayim. On the 7th of ER was the inauguration of the walls of Yerushalayim, the Lola Mispah. That you cannot, not only can fast, but also you can do a hesped. And it mentions, Mishnei Mekom was Kosev Amgila Zuz Chanukas Yerushalayim Bilal HaMispet. In two places, it says, and in other words, this Megillah carries two dates commemorating the fact that they inaugurated the walls of Yerushalayim. One, Kishal Yerushal Magolo, Ve'erud Kishapartu Malchayovan Megadur Beis Chashmonai. So, as I said, the Yom Tov that happened in Megillas Tainus took place throughout the duration of the second Beis HaMikdash. So the first time that they celebrated the wall, the inauguration of the walls of Yerushalayim is in the days when they went, when they came back to Yerushalayim from Golos Babel, in other words, under the Persian government. And the second time is when the Greeks breached the walls of Yerushalayim, and the Hashmonai kings were powerful enough that they were able to defeat the Greek kings and rebuild the walls of Yerushalayim. Which is which, it doesn't say over here. One takes place in Iyar, one takes place in the month of Elul. As we'll see, the one takes place in the month of Elul does not match the day that's mentioned in Sefer Nechemiah. In Sefer Nechemiah, it mentions that the walls of Yerushalayim were completed, if I remember correctly, the 21st of Elul or the 22nd. While the days of the date mentioned over here in Elul is not, doesn't fit with that date. So it's not clear why a different date, but basically two celebrations for the commemoration of the walls of Yerushalayim, when Allah was able to protect the city. And another day in the month of Iyar is the 14th of Iyar, and the 14th of Iyar is Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni, when you bring the people who were not able to mark of Korban and Pesach Rishon because they were Tameh or they were Bederech Chokah, they can bring it again on the 14th. Ve'eshem B'shlosha Be'i. On the 23rd of Iyar, Nafku B'nei Karayim Yerushalayim. The people, Karayim, now Karayim in modern Hebrew means the Karaites, but we're of course not talking about them who didn't exist at the time. The Chassid, it says, Ve'elko David, Eis Metzudas Tzion, he ear David. By David HaMelech in the first place of Megdush, it says that David captured Metzudas Tzion, the fortress of Zion, and that is Mekom HaKarayim, Shayumitzi Achshav. Now, in other words, in the days of the first place of Megdush, in the days of David HaMelech, he captured it, that was a Knani. And in modern times, we're talking about the Karayim. We'll soon, in a moment, discuss who these people are. Shemetzim v'nei Yerushalayim. They were causing trouble for v'nei Yerushalayim. V'lo Yerushalayim. V'lo Yisrael l'chol matzeis v'lover v'nei b'yom el b'layla. They couldn't enter or leave the city. U'kishikama v'ez chashmonai higlo osa misham. And when v'ez chashmonai were stronger, they were able to get him out. V'osam shakom asom yom. And the day that they were able to uproot them, they made into a yacht. Who are these Karayim? Now the Karayim, again, as I said, not to be confused with the modern day Karaites. That's a big no-no. Absolutely not. So who are these Karayim? The word Karayim can actually come from the word Hakra, or Akra, as an Acropolis. We know that when the whole story of Hanukkah, Antiochus the Fourth, Antiochus Epiphanes, we're talking about the years 166 BCE, he wanted to make Yerushalayim into a Hellenistic city. And what he did was he brought Hellenistic population and he put them in the Acra and the Acropolis of Yerushalayim. That's where he put them. In other words, he put them in the strongest place of Yerushalayim. And in other words, if they're there, no one's going to get rid of them. And the truth is, that's pretty much true. For years, no one was able to get rid of them. Even though the miracle of Hanukkah took place 3 years later, and the Beis HaMikdash is inaugurated. And for 20 years later, and the Jews control Yerushalayim, but these troublemakers, these Greek, these Hellenists, are still living in the Acropolis in Yerushalayim, causing trouble for Bnei Yisrael. And only 23 years later, one of the Hashmonai brothers, if I remember correctly, it was Yonatan, but I'm not sure, was finally able to overpower and capture this stronghold and get rid of these Hellenists, and that's what we're talking about over here when it says the Beis Hashmonai Higlu Osam, they made a Yomtiv. It was a very big celebration because for 23 years these people were causing a lot of trouble and there was nothing that could be done until finally they were able to get rid of them. If we talk about archaeological remains, to this very day this is one of the biggest mysteries. I can't say it's a mystery because Yonatan HaChashmonai, when he finally defeated them, he leveled this fortress down to the foundations. He knocked the whole thing down, so therefore there's no trace of it. And secondly, when King Herodes rebuilt the second Beis HaMikdash, he expanded it, and the odds are that when he expanded the Beis HaMikdash and the Har HaBayis, expanded the Har HaBayis rather, not the Beis HaMikdash, when he expanded it, he rebuilt it over the area that formerly was this fortress in Yerushalayim. So it's a little hard to find archaeological evidence from this fortress, as we know that it was totally destroyed. But this, the Megillas Tainus seems to be saying that the location of this fortress is in the place where Metzudas David was in the days of David HaMelech. And if so, that once again matches what we know from Josephus, that this fortress was in the southern part of Har HaBayis, a little farther south than where it's assumed to be, but in the area of Ir David today. For those who know, would be the location where this fortress stood. Okay, so that's Iyar. Next, we're going to go on to the month of Sivan. In the month of Sivan, it mentions conquest of two places. One is Achidas Migdal Tzor, which we're not exactly sure where it is, but that was a thing that belonged to the Edomites, which means the Romans probably, and the Greeks, and the Bnei the Greeks, and when the Bnei Hashmonaim captured, they were able to, they made Yom Tov. V'chamisha asabei v'shisha asabei golo anshei Beis Shan. And the 15th and the 16th of Sivan, the people of Beis Shan went to Golos, v'anshei Bikata, the people of Bikata, v'avein hoi yosid roli sobimi yivonim, klepe arvi. And they were a bad peg for Yisrael in the days of the Greeks. In other words, in the days of the Greeks, they caused a lot of tsars for the Jewish people. They weren't chayv golos, and in the days of Yeshua ben Nun, he didn't capture Beit Shan, and in the days of David HaMelech, he didn't capture Beit Shan. So the first time they're getting rid of the goyim while living in Beit Shan is only in the second Beis HaMikdash. V'chivash and chayv golos, once they were chayv golos, gavra, Yadam Shal Beis Hashmonai V'Iglo Asa. The Beis Hashmonai were able to overpower them. V'osa Yom Aso Yom Tov. So in other words, Beit Shan was trouble, and we know this also from the book of the Maccabees. When Yehuda Maccabee went to rescue the Jews in the Galil, he brought them to Yerushalayim, and he had a problem, was that on the way, the city of Beit Shan was there, and that was a Goyish city. He had a problem to bring them past the city of Beit Shan. Anyway, we see over here that they captured Beit Shan, and in the archives of Shiurim, which I've given, we have a whole discussion on Chulin. You can find the Shiur when the Gemara in Chulin says that Beit Shan was not captured. We discussed what to do with this section of the Amiglas Tainus that says eventually it was. We discussed that at length. We will not go into that now. That can be found in Gemara in Chulin, if I remember correctly, in the first parak, of Zayin Daf Ches. Okay. And later on, it talks about the different debates that went in the days of King Alexander the Great. Now, all these debates can be found in Perak Chelek, in the last Perak in Sanhedrin. I just mentioned an interesting debate that's brought here, and has to do with this week's when we're learning the Shmos, Ve'er, and Bo. It says that the people of Egypt came, the Egyptians came to Alexander the Great, and they said, look, when Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, it says in the Torah that they borrowed clothing, garments, they borrowed golden vessels, silver vessels, and they took them all, and they took them with them, and now it's time to pay up. So Alexander said to the Jews, and what do you say? So they said, well, it says in the Torah that Bnei Yisrael worked for the Egyptians for 430 years. So if they'll pay us the amount that the people worked for 430 years in Mitzrayim, so then we'll give back the rest. Now, I was entitled to 4-hour employment, now that we'll give back the rest. So Alexander said to the Egyptians, what do you say to that? And they didn't have an answer. They asked for 3 days. When they didn't have an answer, they ran away. So an interesting question that's asked is, how could they demand payment for 430 years when we know the Klal Yisrael were not even in the Mitzrayim for a full 430 years? They were there for 210 years. And the amount of years that they worked is actually 86 years. And Miriam, who was 86 when they left Mitzrayim, Moshe was 80, as it says in this week's parasha, and Aaron was 83, and Miriam was 86, 3 years older. And Miriam was born at the beginning of the Shibud, and that's where she got her name. Miriam comes from the word mar, bitter, because that's when the Shibud began, the enslavement began. So they only worked in Mitzrayim for 86 years. How could they say they worked for 430 years? Now, in truth, it's not really such a big question, because the Egyptians were bringing proof from the Pasuk. So they said, if you come from the Pasuk, we also come from the Pasuk, and this is what it says in the Pasuk. But the word that says is like this. It says when they went out of Mitzrayim, only 20% went out of Mitzrayim, and the rest remained died in Mitzrayim. So in other words, they're actually asking for employment for 600,000 people. But in reality, that's only 20%. There should be 3 million. So in other words, it should be 5 times as much, 600,000 people. So if you take 86 years, and you multiply 86 by 5, you get 430 years. So in essence, 430 years of employment for 600,000 people is equal to 86 years of employment for 3 million people. So in essence, they're actually asking for the right price. Okay. Perek Rabbi, Tammuz. V'abrosa b'Tammuz, other svar gzeta d'lo l'mispat. In the fourth in the 14th of Tammuz, the Sefer Gzeira, the Sefer of Rules from the Tzedukim was gone, the Lolan Mispot. Now, Shaira Kosev Amunach, the Tzedukim Sefer Gzeiras. The Tzedukim had a book, and said it like this, Eilu Shenis Kolom, Ve'elu Shenis Srafim, Ve'elu Shen Haragim, Ve'elu Shen Achmakim. We know the four Muses, Bezdin, Skila, Sreifa, Harag, and Chenek, and they had a book, and when someone had to be given capital punishment, they opened the book, it says, this guy gets this, this guy gets this, this guy gets this. So, when people came to them and said, now, on what basis do you make up your mind and decide that this guy deserves skila and this guy deserves srefa? How do you decide this? They didn't know. Because it says, Apia Torah Sheyerucha. In other words, it's got to be written in the Torah. So, they didn't know what to do. And finally, on the 14th of Tammuz, the Tzedukim were convinced that their book is null and void, and they do not have the right issues of who to give what type of capital punishment. So we need a little explanation over here. It's true in the Torah, there are a few types of death that are mentioned. All that's mentioned is Sreifa in one or two places. Skila is also mentioned in a couple of places, and Herek and killing, it doesn't mention Chenek at all. It's A. B, not all people of Chayav Sreifa are mentioned specifically. It says in some of them, all it says is the man bum, and we're going to examine Shabbat, the man bum, Yechayev Skila, but it doesn't say who. So in other words, the Torah does mention capital punishment, but it doesn't go into specific details directly, it doesn't mention explicitly which punishment fits which crime. So those people who believe in Torah Shabbat, like the Purushim, they had Gzeir Shabbat, they could learn everything is fine. But the Tzedukim don't believe in Torah Shabbat, and they don't have Gzeir Shabbat. And if they don't have Gzeir Shabbat, then the question is, how do they decide who gets skila and who gets Sreifa? So they had their book. That's very nice, you have your book. But that's what the people were asking them. How do you know that what's written in the book is right? Where do you get this point? Okay, so we see that there was contention on this issue of Arba Mises Besti, who gets what. We know furthermore that also the way of doing this was also a point of contention. For example, it says in the Torah, Sreifa. So how do you do Sreifa? And the Gemara Sanhedrin says that you force the guy to open his mouth and you pour hot lead down his throat, and that causes him to die a death which is a comfortable death, you can say. And that was not too painful. The Tzedukim, on the other hand, they said, no, Be'esh Tisara, if you burn them on fire, you burn them at stake. Literally. So now there's a bunch of points of contention between the Tzedukim and the Purushim as far as Mrs. Breston are concerned. Another interesting thing, once again, we go back to this document from Megillat HaMikdash, this Dead Sea Scroll document, and it seems, I'm not going to read the whole thing now because time is short, but it seems that they also had a form of death by hanging. So let's see what it says. In the Torah it says, V'chi yavish chet mishpat moves v'humas. If a person has a chet, he did a crime, mishpat moves, worthy of death, v'humas, and you kill him, v'salis osolates, and you should hang him on a tree, v'osolenif osolates, you shouldn't leave his corpse on the tree overnight. So that's what it says in the Torah. In other words, the Torah doesn't say that you kill the person by hanging, but rather you kill him, and afterwards you hang him. The hanging is another part of the punishment after the person is already dead. And that's what the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. But when we read in the temple scroll, things are a little switched. Things are a little reversed. When a person does a chet, and he's guilty, and he's punishable by death. And the scroll tells what the person did. He ran away to the goyim, and he cursed Klal Yisrael. You should hang him on a tree, and he shall die. You shouldn't leave his corpse on the tree, you should bury it that day. So in other words, it says over here, according to the Tzedukim, which as we said, the Megillas HaMikdash is a Tzeduki document, it says over here that there's a form of death by hanging. There's a form of death by hanging. Which, again, is not according to what we believe. Hanging, according to us, is only done by certain people who got skila. You punish them additionally by putting them on, hanging them on the tree. Very interestingly, in Rus, this is a fascinating thing. In Rus, it says that when Naomi tried to dissuade Rus from converting, she told him we have four mises besdin. So the Targum mentions the four mises besdin, and one of them is burning at stake, burning on the fire. So the Chasam Sofer was asked, what do you mean burning on the fire? We don't burn on the fire. We do Sreifa when it was done. We don't do it today. But when it was done by pouring hot lead down the person's throat. It wasn't done by putting burning people at stake. So how could the Targum say that it's burning people at stake? So the Chasam Sofer said that the Targum on Rus is a Tzeduki Targum. That's what the Chasam Sofer writes. I don't remember the exact source, but I saw it inside, quoted by his Talmud. That there's other evidence to that also, that the Targum on Rus is Tzeduki Targum. What's interesting is that in that same Targum it says over there that one of the forms of death is Tzlivas Kesa, is hanging a person on a tree. So you see, once again, matching what we know from the Temple Scroll, that they had a form of death by hanging, is also known from the Temple Scroll, and also known from this very interesting Targum in Rus, which as I said, the Chasam Sofer says, is a Tzeduki Targum. Okay, we're going to go on, and as I said, we don't have time to do everything. So I want to skip to what's listed over here, the month of Kislev, because it's very interesting to us. In the month of Kislev, which is the ninth parak, it has over here, Be'esrim v'chad be'yom ha'grizim. On the 21st day of Kislev is the day of ha'grizim. Now the reason why I get to this date is because in the Girsa, in the Gemara, in Maseches Yoma, Samach Aleph, Amar Aleph, it doesn't say the 21st of Kislev, but it says the 25th of Teves. And the 25th of Teves, finish Shalayim, that's the date at this very moment. So in other words, Megillas Tainus is relevant for us today, except that we paskin that Megillas Tainus was batel. But this is the day of Yom HaGrizim. What was the special issue of HaGrizim? We spoke about the Samaritans. And the Samaritans, they were considered Jews, and they kept certain mitzvahs. But the biggest point of contention between the Samaritans and the other and the Jews were the issue of which mountain is a sanctified mountain. Is the mountain Har Bais in Yerushalayim, or is it Har Gerizim? Har Gerizim is near Shechem today. And the Samaritans built their temple on Har Gerizim. So this, the 25th of Teves, or the 21st of Kislev, is Yom Har Gerizim. The Kusim requested from Alexander the Great permission to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And they told him, we want to buy 5 kur of land on Har Moriah. Very interesting amount. We'll talk about this in a moment. We'll show you something fascinating. And Alexander the Great agreed to this, and he says, your wish is granted. The Kohen Gadol at the time was Shimon HaTzadik. In other words, that the Kusim got permission to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. What did he do? He wore the Big Day Kahuna of the Kohen Gadol, and the elders, the Choshev people of Yerushalayim, went with him. And they went with a whole procession to greet Alexander the Great. Shimon HaTzadik and his entourage are going from one side, and Alexander the Great is ascending to Yerushalayim from the other side. Who are these people? When Alexander the Great sees this whole procession coming opposite him, he says, who are these people? So the people, the Kusim said, Halola Yehudim Shemardu B'cha, these are the Jews who rebelled against you. Kibun Shigel Antipras, when they reached a town called Antipras, which is today near modern day Rosh Ha'in, Zarchalam Chama. Zarchalam Chama, that's when the sun, they went the whole night, that's when the sun rose. He healed a Mishma Rishon, he reached the first group of people, of Jews. Nivkuzebizeh, Amla Miyatim. He says, who are you? Amulahem, so they answered, Anu Anshe Yerushalayim, we are people from Yerushalayim, Uvanu La'akbu Pnei HaMelech, and we came to greet the king. Kimantra Alexander Mavdon is Shimon HaTzadik. Now Alexander the Great, who in Chazal is called Alexander Mavdon, Alexander of Macedonia, when he saw Shimon HaTzadik, Yard Mimakovto, he went off, he got off his chariot, Mishtachvelo, and he bowed down to Shimon HaTzadik. Amulah, he told him, Melech Gol to Moshe, Yishtachvelo, Yudizeh, a great king like you, you bow down to this Jew. Amulah, he told him, Diokno Shilzani Rogsh, and Yard Melchama Benotzeach. It's the image of this person I see when I go to war and I win. Amalam lama basem. He says, why did you come? Amalam, they said, Malkum shanachim ispalim alech wa mechuscha shalot echar. A place where we pray for you and your kingdom that it shouldn't be destroyed. Yasucha goyim alalu. These goyim will mislead you. Vetitnu lahem. Amalam mihem. Who are they? Halom, amalam. Hakusim shomnim lefanecha. It's these kusim. Amalam aret. Hey, mesur b'yetchem. They are in your hands. Ma'asulam, what did they do? Nikvu mikveyam. They made holes in the heels. Utlarim bezinvis usayim, and they hung them onto the tails of the horses. Ve'megarim osam alakotzim alabrakonim, and they're dragging them on the thorns. Ajigul haragrizim, till they reach haragrizim. Chashu v'zaru kashinim. They plowed haragrizim and they planted it with animal feed. Kedach shir bikshul asos v'beis alokeinu. What the kusim wanted to do to the beis hamikdash, the Jews did to our reason. So in other words, the story is, and very brief, that they wanted to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and Alexander gave him permission. Let's give a little background material. Alexander, in the year 333 BCE, is capturing the Persian Empire. He's coming from Greece. He has a long way to go to Persia. First, he'll come along the coast, capture Eretz Yisrael, capture Lebanon, capture Eretz Yisrael. From there, he'll capture Egypt. And from Egypt, he comes back to Eretz Yisrael. And from there, he eventually will go to Persia and capture and the Persepolis in the year 330, and eventually kill the last Persian emperor, Darius. Now, when he first came to Eretz Yisrael, he wanted Shimon HaTzadik, or the Kongola, was known as Yaduah, who might be the same person, he wanted him to support him. And he refused because he was loyal to the Persian king. The Kusim, on the other hand, they were loyal to Alexander the Great. On the way back, we know that the Kusim rebelled against Alexander the Great. And he punished them. Now, we know that they built a temple on Haragrizim, and there's two stages of this temple. One was built during the Persian period, in other words, the Persian government gave him permission to build this temple, and the second temple was built in the Hellenistic period, when the Greeks ruled over there. Who destroyed it? So this Chazal say that the Jews actually destroyed the first one, and the Jews actually destroyed the second one also. King Yochanan Harkonus captured it and destroyed it. Massive excavations, which have been done on Haragrizim, have uncovered remains of this temple, very fascinating. So far they found 500,000 fragments of bones from kabanos used for oxen, sheep, birds, etc. They found a massive staircase. We have pictures? They found a massive staircase going up from the east, gates which match the description as in Sefer Yecheskel for the Beis HaMikdash. It must have been a massive thing, and of course it was a massive thing, then that gives us a little idea of the amount of the population. You don't just build a temple for no one. If you build such a massive thing, there must have been a large population. The whole center of the country was settled with Kusim during the second Beis HaMikdash. And indeed it was destroyed. The first one was destroyed by the Jews with permission of Alexander the Great. What's very interesting over here is they said, Mechol lanu chamisha kurim eretz v'har Moriah. Sell us 5 kur of land in Har Moriah. Why 5 kur of land? What is this number, 5 kur of land? So I heard from a good friend of mine of Zamakur and Shlita, who saw it in a sefer, one of the Perushim. Brilliant. Mamish, brilliant. We know that the Harabais The Mishnah tells us in Maseches Midos the Har Bayis was 500 amas by 500 amas square. Har Bayis, the mountain itself, is round. Now, if you want to know how much, if you have 500 amas by 500 amas square, and you encircle it with a circle, how much territory? What's the area that includes, that goes into this circle? So if you have your calculators on your computer, it's very simple to work it out. Okay, so we have 500 amas by 500 amas, that's square. But if let's say we want to make a circle around it, so the first thing we have to know is the diameter of the diameter of this square. According to Chazal, the diameter is 1.4. So in other words, if it's 500, if it's square 500, so 500 times 1.4 gives us, of course, 700. So the diameter of the diagonal of this square is 700 amas. Now, if we want to, if this becomes the diameter of a circle which goes around it, so then the radius is cut into half, and we cut that into half, and we're left, of course, we're left with 350. So we take, so the radius is 350. Take 350, and we want to know the we want to know how much territory fits into this circle. So in modern math, 350 radius times pi. But in the times of, in the Gemara, it's, there is no pi. It's done on a basis of 3. So take 350, multiply 350 by 350, and multiply that by 3, and we get a number over here, 367,500. Write down that number, 367,500. That is how much territory fits in to the circle that will encompass a 500 by 500 amma squared area. Now, what did the Kusim ask? They asked for 5 kur. How much is a kur? They asked for 5 kur. How much is a kur? A kur is 30 seah, and a seah is 50 by 50 amas. So I take 50 by 50 times 50. I get 2,500 amos is a seah, and I multiply that by 30. That's a base kur. I get 75,000. And now they ask for 5 kur. So I multiply that by 5, and sure enough, I get exactly that same number. No, I got it wrong. 375. May have been off. Let's see this again. Doesn't work out. We're going to have to check our records again. Times 5. Yeah, no, it doesn't work out. Very close, but it doesn't work out. Okay, we're going to have to figure out the exact thing. How the, not now, but we'll lean that over to you for next time. Exactly how the calculation works. But anyway, the calculation done is that 5 kur is a circle that encompasses the square of 500 amas by 500 amas. In other words, the Kusim were asking for the Har Habayis in total, and that's why they asked for 5 kur to include that area. Okay, so again, as we said, today is the Yom Tov in Megillas Tainis, but the Maskana of the Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah is that all the Yom Tov in Megillas Tainis are batel, except for Chanukah and Purim. Why except for Chanukah and Purim? Because all these Yom Tovim that we mentioned were good as long as the Beis HaMikdash was standing. But now that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, it really doesn't make much of a difference to us that in those days the Beis HaMikdash was saved or they built a wall around Yerushalayim. We don't gain anything from it. But Chanukah and Purim, their impact is everlasting. In other words, today, the fact that Jewish people exist is the fact that in Hanukkah they weren't overpowered spiritually by the Greeks, and in Purim they weren't physically annihilated by the Haman. So their impact is everlasting, and that's why these Yom Tov, these days of Megillas Tanis remain to this very day, while all the other Yom Tov Megillas Tanis are but.